Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio in our new time slot. I'm not going to say that after tonight because this is the second time that we've now been in our new time slot. I'm Carol Murphy. This evening, thank you for being here, by the way. This evening, we have David Drake with us, and he is a cryptocurrency expert. Just a moment, he will be back to tell you all about what he is up to. And there's a lot to cover tonight, so we might have to have David back at some point. But at any rate, thank you for being here. Be right back.
The ribbon of highway I saw above me. The endless skyway I saw below me. That golden valley, this land was me, you and me.
Hi, you're with Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy. This evening we have with us David Drake, who is the founder and chairman of LDJ Capital. He is a cryptocurrency expert. Hi, David.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
We're excited too, because you know what? The sun is out and it's a beautiful day in here in Montana, which is, as of late, kind of an unusual predicament because it's been snowing here. And I'll bet it's sunny and warm where you are, though.
I wouldn't say that. I'm in New Jersey at Crystal Springs Resort, so I do get to see some of the sunset, but it certainly isn't warm.
What's the temperature, would you say? Like above 30 degrees?
Yeah, it's been around 36 degrees.
Balmy.
Today, yeah.
It's above
last week, but we have snow, and I like it. Yeah. No, I'm originally from Sweden, so bring it on. I like the snow.
Nice. So please, David, tell our listeners who you are and what you do. You've got a lot of irons in the fire.
Yes, I do. Look, I'm a Swedish boy that grew up in Stockholm, Sweden. Mom and dad still lives there. I came over here 25 years ago to go to undergrad and grad school. And I made my money in real estate in New York City and technology, venture capital. So the last 25 years being in New York, I have now pivoted from hedge funds and real estate and crypto to crypto. And, you know, I had a long history from 2011 lobbying for the Jobs Act, Jumpstart Startups Act, allowing us to advertise. Because in the 33 and 34 Act, you weren't allowed to advertise. And the internet didn't exist those days. So, you know, we finally caught up with the Jobs Act. Yet again, it took them 5 years to pass the laws into efficient laws. So today we can advertise to get investors to put money in. These archaic and new laws allows me to advise people, specifically cryptocurrency firms, on how they can raise money in the U.S. So about 2 years ago, they all came to me and said, David, we're spending a lot of money on legal. Can you help us? You lobbied and changed the law for 6 years. You can kind of like make sure we don't get fleeced and taken advantage of by the law firms, and that we're doing the right thing. So I ended up advising 100 initial coin offerings. And the beautiful thing was, I got to see under the hood. They got to tell me all their secrets, the problems, the conflicts, the regions, the partners, the marketers, the translators, the jurisdictions. By default, I realized I had a lot of answers. So more companies came to me asking for more advice. Today, I'm advising for 6 public companies, helping them deploy capital into the cryptocurrency space. And a lot of corporate clients in the U.S. are starting to get into the space. I'm working with Atari. I'm working with Kodak. CBS, a couple of weeks, flew in to work with us. So we get some great, huge brands realizing the value of blockchain technology. So what, you know, what else would you like me to share today?
Well, there's probably a little bit that we need to talk about that some of our listeners may not really understand. One of them is the Jobs Act and blockchain technology. We actually just had a guest on that was explaining to us what exactly that was. But very briefly, just to get folks up to speed, The Jobs Act allowed non-accredited investors to invest in any public offering. Is that a good summary?
Not quite, but the SEC and the laws are so complicated. They said that if you're wealthy enough, you can invest because you have more money and your risk is lower because it diversifies your risk. But the competence doesn't count from the Jobs Act, the accreditation. Look, the Jobs Act, Jobs Act Startups Act, started in 2011 because the House and both the House of Representatives and the Senate want to get reelected. And at that point, say, hey, shouldn't we create jobs after the crisis so we can get reelected? What a great idea. So it grabbed seven laws that we talked about at 10 conferences a month that introduced in one of our subsidiaries. And a year later, they called it the Jobs Act. Did it really create a lot more jobs at the end of the day? Not significantly. But the intentions were good, and the seven laws had nothing to do with each other besides, you know, Congress putting it together, calling it the Jobs Act. Something that was last time that Republicans and Democrats could really agree on something overall. Today, that Jobs Act consists of seven laws. The intention was to create jobs easier by letting capital free flowing come into companies faster, specifically small companies. And part of those three laws is what you're referring to. Can people who are not wealthy, not accredited, invest money in businesses that are not public? If you're public, you have rules and you're allowed to take investors from all of the U.S. If you're private, the U.S. SEC is trying to protect investors to make sure you don't get ripped off. And so there's three exemptions in the private area. One is called Reg A, one is called Reg D506C, one is called the crowdfunding law, where you can only raise $1 million. So if you're not accredited, then the Reg A is really the one that applies to you, but very few people use it. After the accredited, well, you have to have at least $20,000 in salary or $300,000 if you're married the last 2 years, expecting it having in the future, and you're allowed to raise unlimited amount of money. By default, this is all complicated. Point is, you know, we should be able to invest in what we want, and that's what crypto came in to do. Yet again, there's a scene sinister to protect us, to make sure we don't get ripped off, make sure the grandmother doesn't get ripped off. And it's not a new idea. It's been ripoff for 100 years in the U.S. It's been proven and tested for a long time. Do they maybe do it too much? Yes, a lot of people argue it. Too little? Well, that's dangerous. So I think regulation is good, and it's needed, especially when it's been proven that it's needed. I mean, right now there's Facebook sites that says, come here, pump and lie about a token to pump up the price, and then you need to sell it before anybody else so you can rip everybody else off. That's illegal in equities. And you have Facebook groups saying, there's even videos telling people to do it. They're completely naive that they're allowed to do it, and that's mainly because the SEC has not told people that it's illegal due to tokens. Equities and bonds, you go to jail. So, you know, is regulation good and bad? In moderation, it's good. It's because it's been tested. Too much of it, possibly not that good. I mean, you got Greenspan. The Great Depression, Greenspan apologized on TV and said, I was wrong. We needed more regulation.
Yes. So let's start from the beginning here and really get listeners' feet founded on firm ground. Give us the basics of cryptocurrency and why is it that everybody should be paying attention to it? It's nebulous to many people. They don't get it. They don't understand it. It's imaginary. It's speculative.
Well, first of all, it's a fallacy that everybody has to pay attention to it. I disagree. I think it's a great technology and it shouldn't be in the forefront. It should be on the back end. I'll give you an example. Until Apple came to me, I was afraid of computers. I was fearful. When Apple came, they made using a laptop sexy, simple, colorful, easy. I still don't understand what's going on behind the screen. I might know more than most, but it works. I press a button, it works. this is the same thing. Not everybody has to understand it. They don't even have to use it. But it's a technology that works. And we need an Apple to come in to say, let me make this easy for you. We're not there yet. It's extremely complicated. There's security laws. There's contract laws. There's technology. It's like Apple combined with SEC and legislation and law and politics. It's a mess. What we need is an Apple to come in and say, let me make it easy for you. You don't even see it. It's working in the back end. But all you know is using your credit card and you're getting points. You're playing a game and you get coins on your screen, but you can go and buy a laptop, whatever it is. The technology of crypto is really blockchain. Blockchain is you're looking at the screen of a TV and you have one and zeros in the thousands. Every row has one and zeros. Suddenly it looks like a piece of blocks. It looks like a brick on your screen. And that's blockchain. That block says, I have a coin. I press send. The next block says, coin was sent to this address. Two blocks. Those two blocks of code saying that I sent it somewhere is on 125,000 computers around the world. You can't shut those computers down. You think the Russians can shut their computers down because we tell them so? Of course not. Do you think these secret computers in other countries can be shut down? No. That's why you can't change that code, because every computer has the same code. That's the ledger. It says that these two blocks are every computer in the world exactly the same. You can't go back and change it. It's immutable. And that's why this technology is so powerful, because you would have to change every computer in the world. And these countries are like, no, I don't care about you. You can't force us to do what you want to do. It's privacy issues. That's what this blockchain is about. It's pure computer code. But it also becomes an accounting software. Imagine you do these blocks 1,000 times. After 1,000 times, I can go back and look at the code 1,000 times backwards to see where it started. It doesn't mean that each one of those had temperature, a picture, location, but there is code attached to it. And you could add in logistics, temperature, location, pressure, sunlight, each time it's registered, each time something happens. That is possible. Which in food and expensive medication becomes interesting, because now you can track stuff.
You use the word immutable. This is an immutable money system that operates independent of any central bank, or cannot be changed, essentially, or manipulated, maybe is a good word.
Yes. So you have a ledger which says money in, money out. You get 120,000 computers. It says, hey, I am going to agree to keep this ledger on my computer. Let's call it Bitcoin. We're used to that word, Bitcoin. It's 120,000 computers around the world says, I'm going to mine Bitcoin. And I agree to keep this ledger, money in, money out, on my computer. And it needs to match every other computer in the world doing the same thing for Bitcoin mining. There you go. How are you going to change that? 120,000 computers around the world in 120 countries.
So
they have to have exactly the same input-output. You can't go back and change anything. Because the computers will compare themselves to each other.
In my mind, that's kind of both a good thing and a bad thing.
You want to trick the system and cheat the system and change something?
No, not at all. I'm just thinking that anytime something new like this comes along, you know, we saw it just recently with Facebook and all of the fallout of people's information being used that they weren't aware of and being used in ways that maybe they didn't approve of. Can't that true be said about cryptocurrency? Is it being used, like, for example, to hide money for illegal activity? So if somebody wants to fund a terrorist organization, they can do that with cryptocurrency.
I guess they could. You know, the cryptocurrency is, strangely enough, you can take that code and you could physically put it in your wallet. You know, you take a dollar bill and you go to the store and you give somebody a dollar bill. He will never know where that dollar bill came from. He could not track that. You give him a dollar bill or a $100 bill from your wallet. He knows it's valuable, but he has no idea where it came from. But you know, it has a serial code, right? And each time that dollar bill had been moved and registered with serial code, you could track where that code was registered.
So it is trackable.
Bitcoin is exactly the same.
Maybe it can't be manipulated, but it can be tracked. Is that your point?
It's possible, yes. You can track these things online. Mm-hmm. You have an access to the ledgers of every Bitcoin in the world. What you don't know is who owns it. Mm. Now, the government is smart enough that they can identify you. It's not completely anonymous.
Hmm.
If you know what you're looking for and you understand who you're looking to attach it to, the government will be able to attach it. So it's not 100% anonymous.
Hmm.
Now, there are coins that are trying to be 100% anonymous because people live in, you know, countries where demagogues and tyrants are running it, and they want to safekeep their money, so they want to keep it secret. And yes, this has been a huge problem on the black market because people are using these coins to buy and sell things digitally. It's just like a dollar bill in your pocket. You're sending it and receiving it left and right. However, if you can attach a number to a person, you can see what they did with it and where it went.
So, David, let's go ahead and take a quick break. We're actually a little past our breaking point, but that's okay. And we'll be right back. This is Heartstock. We're with David Drake. We'll be right back.
This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream Waters. This land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
Thanks for tuning in. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy. And this evening we have David Drake on the line. And David is a cryptocurrency expert. We were just talking about the different ways that cryptocurrency can be used. And one of those ways is kind of a black market, I think, was the word that you used. Is that correct, David?
Yes. When Bitcoin, the first cryptocurrency ever, was created in 2009 by the mysterious creator called Satoshi,
he
started becoming a...
Nobody knows who that is yet.
Correct.
Yeah.
To me, it was Occupy Wall Street's revenge on the centralized government who created the crisis.
Yes.
So Bitcoin was created, and they said, there'll be only 21 million of them. And it'll take a decade before you can receive all of them through what they call mining.
Mm-hmm.
And it was created as a currency against the governments of the world who had created the crisis. At that time, 80% of all transactions on cryptocurrencies for Bitcoin were done on the black market, I've been told. Buying illegal things and transacting illegally on the dark web. Today, that has changed to reverse, where 80% of transactions are now in the public. And at the same time, you know, can, you know, terrorists be using this and transfer value across the world in seconds? Absolutely. Is it a concern? Absolutely. So the government, the CIA and FBI and foreign governments are working to create KYC, Know Your Customer, and AML, anti-money laundering rules. And consequently, that's a pandemic topic amongst all governments and regulators around the world to say, if you're going to say in cryptocurrencies, just like cash, we need to know where you got it, who you are, and where you're sending it from.
So there's some transparency, even though it can't be manipulated. It sounds to me like the answer to the downside of cryptocurrency is transparency. Is that accurate, you think?
The identity of where the money came from is that argument. Mm-hmm. But the intrinsic value of crypto is that it's a computer code in a block that can be forever tracked, traced, so to say.
Yep.
Now, who owns it is still not clear unless you can identify who they are.
Yeah.
So now when you hear about crypto being invested into businesses, everybody's demanding to know, who are you and how do you get this crypto? Mm-hmm. But until that point, it's still invisible. It's like a dollar bill. If I take my dollar bill and I give it to somebody else in the store, nobody knew I did that. And nobody's tracking it. Nobody's registering that dollar bill in my wallet, nor at the cash register, because that's a code.
Yeah, so same this thing. Is digital, just not a piece of paper. We've got about 5 minutes left, and I was hoping that you could talk a little bit about the extreme changes in the value and the ups and downs and the speculative nature of cryptocurrency. What lies ahead, and what have we survived a huge fall in the price of cryptocurrency?
Yes, we have. Look, my family office has been involved in cryptocurrency since 2011. We take pride of being compliant and understand the law and the Jobs Act, SEC, and how to use these in a compliant manner. Today, I'm seeing most of my business coming in from operating businesses in the U.S., and on being on the board for 6 public companies who want to invest in cryptocurrency-related businesses. We have hit the brunt of the lowest point of cryptocurrency, and we're only going to see an upside from now on. I said 3 months ago, as I advise all of these operating businesses who want to use cryptocurrency for loyalty, that it's going to be a very cold winter. Regulators are making complaints and comments from Korea to Germany to France. And each time they made a comment, the market tanked 20%. Mm. Now, the SEC subpoenaed 80 companies 3 weeks ago. They told exchanges they might not be compliant a week and a half ago. And the market hit a rut, falling down heavily. At the same time, you have crypto traders, speculators, hedge funds, forex traders that love this space because it's not regulated and they can manipulate and do things that would be illegal in the real market.
In addition
to that, you have quant funds.
Buying and selling type activities?
Correct.
Okay.
They're smart. So the mass market comes in and buys and they perpetuate going down, they're just pushing it further down. Going up, they're pushing it further up. Mm-hmm. So it's very volatile, and it's going to continue being volatile, but overall it will increase in April and May, because now the regulators have made their stake, and they're giving us guidance, and there'll be less uncertainty.
So
we call it FUD.
It sounds like the more level-handed type regulation that we see in the future, the less volatile it will become over time. You think that's correct?
It will still be more volatile than anything we've ever seen before, but it won't be a heart attack volatile than in the last 3 months.
So we've got just a couple minutes left. You're involved with some other things outside of cryptocurrency, and one of those is investing in alternative energy. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
How does that compare to cryptocurrency? It sounds like it would be totally, completely different, like investing in your local utility more.
This is what blows my mind. How can you take cryptocurrency with energy? So we invested several million dollars in WePower from Europe. And WePower would register the energy from a hydro plant by a river. And they would say, the energy here at the hydro plant gets a block of code that was created here. When that energy moves to another power station, another block of code is registered. And so on and so on. By the time it reaches your outlet in your house, you can technically, forensically, accounting-wise, track that energy all the way back to the power plant by the river.
So it's related to blockchain.
To identify energy. Mm-hmm. And it just blows your mind that you can do that.
So
it's like, what?
We have run out of time, and I still feel like we have a lot to talk about, but how might folks reach you, David, should they want to continue this conversation?
Email me, david@ldjcapital.com, and mention your show, and I will respond to everybody.
Thank you so much for being with us and enlightened. I feel like I learned a lot, which is always good. This is Carol Murphy.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Bye-bye.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at ButteAmericaRadio.org.
This land was made for you and oh, when the sun came shining and I was strolling and the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling as the fog was lifting, a voice was chanting, this land was made for you and me. And as I went walking, I saw a sign there, and on the sign it said no trespassing, but on the other side it didn't say nothing. That sign was made for you and me. In the shadow of the steeple I saw my people by the early forfeits. I see my people as they stood there.